The Berlin Security Beat is an original podcast produced by the Center for National Security at the Hertie School in Berlin. Welcome back to Season 3 of the Berlin Security Beat, where we address all things cybersecurity. In the next several episodes, we'll be focusing on international cybersecurity diplomacy and policy, and I must admit that I am incredibly excited about today's guest. Ambassador Helle Tiermaklar, director of the Digital Society Institute at the European School of Management and Technology in Berlin, has been one of the key figures in European cybersecurity policy and diplomacy since the late 2000s. She served as ambassador at large for cyber diplomacy at the Estonian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and played pivotal roles in cyber policy development at NATO headquarters, the European External Action Service, and the Estonian Ministry of Defense. During her tenure, she spearheaded numerous initiatives aimed at promoting security in the digital realm. She was instrumental in crafting Estonia's pioneering national cybersecurity strategy following the cyber attacks of 2007, and contributed to elevating cybersecurity as a full domain within NATO and much, much more. We will do our best to cover this remarkable amount of ground on today's episode. So let's jump straight in. Helle Tiermaklar, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for appearing.
Thank you for inviting.
You have an extensive background in cyber diplomacy and policy, which places you at the real forefront of European and transatlantic relations on cyber policy and has paved the way for cyber's recognition as a domain in security policy. Your career spans various institutions from the Estonian Ministries of Foreign Affairs and Defense to the European External Action Service and NATO and beyond. Would you begin by telling our audience about your career beginnings and what brought you to cyber?
Well, beginnings actually was a lot more before the cyber was recognized as an important issue. So if I go totally back, then we have to go back to 1995 when like a group of young people at that time in Estonia, we basically kickstarted Ministry of Defense. So we had to build the defense structures of a young country from scratch. There was no template, there were no experts, there was no money, and so somehow we did it. So this is maybe the beginning of my career. But I think it's always useful to have this kind of startup experience very early, not in terms of private sector startup, but the governmental structure startup. Because later on in my career, I always have found myself starting up something in the government, as we did with the Estonian government in early 90s. So, and so it happened that we also started up the Estonian national cyber system after the 2007 attacks, which have become famous. Of course, these attacks became famous because they were the first coordinated large-scale cyber attacks against the entire nation. And they also occurred with other political events on the ground, like riots and attacking Estonian embassy in Moscow and the Duma delegation coming to Estonia and demanding that democratically elected Estonian government should step down. And all this happened over the Estonian government replacement of the Second World War monument, which is called the Bronze Soldier Monument. So, and the cyber attacks were just one element in a broader hybrid campaign, as we would call it now. But in 2007, when it all happened, nobody really was able to even name it. So I think after the 2007 has basically the active phase of this campaign has ended in Tallinn, then we had a endless stream of visitors from different nations in NATO coming to us and asking what exactly happened here and what exactly did you experience, and so we had to explain, and in a way we still explain what happened in 2007, but of course cyber is now such a widespread security threat that we don't have to explain anymore the cyber attacks. But the hybrid campaign that Estonia experienced in 2007, of course, we see this blueprint now everywhere. And this is probably something that most of the European countries have already experienced themselves. And of course, when it comes to cyber, then probably right now Estonia receives the same volume of attacks as it received in 2007 every day. But because of our defenses are so much better and because of our system is up and running, so we even don't notice those attacks. So basically, we just happen to be the first ones that also publicized the attacks, because there had been different intrusions, different serious cyber operations against nations before, but mostly this was kept in secret because it also probably targeted only the specific governmental networks. But in 2007, of course, Estonia experienced the widespread attacks against both civilian, military, government, everything.
Could you elaborate more on the response to 2007 and what it was like to be leading the response? And what was it like to build a national strategy on a topic that at the time was largely undefined? As you said, you've already worked before on building governmental institutions, such as the Ministry of Defense, without a template, from scratch, essentially. So I'm curious about that process. I believe that was the first cyber national strategy in the world.
Well, yes, it was an interesting process. We had a group of people, of course, developing the national strategy, where we had the academics, actual operational cyber defense experts, security and defense policy experts, and different ministries, and also the private sector around the table. So it was a full of government, a national project in a way, not just one part of the government. And of course, once something serious happens in the government, then your political masters would like to have some sort of solution and response. And the operational side of the response was done by our cyber defense experts that were at that time both from the public and private sector. And afterwards, when the active phase of attacks ended, we put together the national strategy and started to, let's say, we started to build a proper basis for a very resilient, not too complex, but kind of common sense type of cyber defense system that would serve a small nation. So I would call Estonian cyber defense model or cybersecurity model or cyber resilience model, however you would like to call it, because in reality, all of those dimensions happened at the same time sometimes. A small nation model where all the available resources are mobilized if necessary. So in Europe, we can, I think, observe three or four different models how the nations have built their cyber systems. And Estonia certainly is one of those that is also using a lot of private sector expertise. But of course, the primary responsibility stays with the government. There is the governmental agency, the State Information Systems Agency, that has responsibility for being a government internet service provider, government ISP, and also has national CERT and all the cyber resilience under its mandate, because this is just how we decided to do it in Estonia. So it is a civilian agency, which is under the Ministry of Economic Affairs and Communications. Under the Ministry of Defense, there is a cyber command. And also in times of war and crisis, there is a cyber defense league. Then is a voluntary defense organization, which is mobilized if necessary. It also is in conventional terms. A defense league also is a conventional reservist army. And then there is also this cyber reservist army, in addition to the conventional one. As you know, Estonia is one of the most digitalized countries probably in the world, so we also have to protect that kind of digital ecosystem. And this protection of the digital ecosystem is spread quite evenly for all the government agencies that are in charge of those digital databases and their bit of that broader digital ecosystem. And how we keep it together, so we initiated quite early stage, we initiated a structure, what we call the National Cybersecurity Council. which is answerable to the National Security Council, which is led by the Prime Minister. And the National Cybersecurity Council is chaired by the highest permanent civil servants in the Ministry of Economic Affairs and Communications. And other permanent secretaries in Estonian system, we call it permanent secretary, like in the British. And other permanent secretaries of defense, justice, foreign affairs, heads of intelligence agencies, heads of major other government agencies belong to the National Cybersecurity Council. So what we basically did in as early as 2007 and 2008, we elevated the responsibility for cybersecurity to the highest possible level in the governmental side. To avoid this problem that we observe, of course, probably now in many organizations, that cyber stays somewhere in the mid-level, and the mid-level managers do not always have the decision-making powers over the resources and over the strategic decisions. And that's why many organizations are not as protected as they should be, because the awareness at the highest level is missing. So in Estonia, we basically got that already very early out so that we have elevated the responsibility for cybersecurity at the national level to the highest level possible. And the National Security Council is then receiving reports from the National Cybersecurity Council. And the National Security Council is already a ministerial level body. Mm-hmm. And the highest level of civil servants are coming together each month or sometimes in each 6 weeks and discussing the actual cyber resilience and security issues. So I have seen with my eyes how two permanent secretaries are passionately talking about patching. You know, if you are not a cyber person, you don't know what patching is. Patching is that if your software is has a vulnerability, you have to patch it. And patching also solves many problems when you run a large organization, because if you do not patch, then you get hacked. And that's why you have to patch. And so that was a bit of anecdote. But I think the system we built, yes, it's very logical, it's easy. And also we certainly have created a culture in Estonian civil service where cyber belongs to the highest level decision makers.
And it sounds like you have balanced your strategy between the operational and strategic levels, which sounds very effective. I have a quick follow-up before we move on. You have mentioned that there's been multiple models that have been spreading around Europe for cybersecurity strategies and development. Have you seen the approaches that you have utilized in Estonia diffuse across Europe to some degree, or have you seen quite different approaches?
I think Europe is so full of very different nations, so you cannot really say like we can have this one approach. And each nation also has its own institutional, organizational tradition. Sometimes, for instance, what is another model also quite well spread in Europe is the British model, where there is a strong intelligence agency that has most of the expertise. And then the one department is basically then dedicated of that intelligence agency to take care of the national cybersecurity and talk to the private sector and so on. So this is another model. There is also the third model of very top-down cyber regulations spread to the sectoral basis, which is a very like a larger nation model, maybe. I think France has that kind of sectoral cyber model. And I don't think that there is one model that is better than the other. It just depends. If it works for the nation, then they should really go with this. And I know the difficulties and complexities with German cyber resilience because of the federal setup of the country and there are many complexities in larger nations. The larger the nation is, the bigger is the, as we call it, attack surface. And for instance, in 2017, when NotPetya was out there, Estonia was one of the few nations in Europe who was virtually untouched because of our prevention methods. We're very strong and we didn't have the possibilities for those viruses to spread, but as we know, many European organizations and businesses got that affected by this, not because their cyber defense is so bad, but because of the complexity of their systems. And as multinational companies, they cannot easily always react when the new virus is around. And
I would like to move now to the international arena. After your work in the Estonian civil service, you moved to international and supranational organizations. You were deeply involved in the development of cyber policy and diplomacy. So maybe if I can start with your tenure at NATO. Your work at NATO has led to the first comprehensive cyber defense policy, and this was 5 years before NATO accepted cyber as a domain along with air, land, and sea. So could you maybe share with our listeners what it was like to develop cyber at NATO? What were the negotiations and policy development like? And how was cyber perceived back then in the early 2010s?
Yeah, in 2009, as you remember, NATO had a new strategic concept where it has taken inspiration from what happened in Estonia, and there was a recognition that large-scale attack against the nation can also be conducted with other means than conventional weapons or nuclear weapons. And NATO started to fulfill this kind of, as the military calls it, tasking, prepare the nations to defend themselves better and also to make sure that NATO as an organization is better protected. In 2010, 2011, it was still quite early stage and not all nations had relevant experts in NATO. What we achieved with this specific strategy at that time, I think, was also the kind of the governance on cyber defense. So there was the NATO governance body internally, so to make sure that NATO own organizations and agencies are protected. And also we set up the cyber defense committee with the nations. Every issue area in NATO has its own committee. And there was a command, control, and communications committee, which was on the military staff side. And there was no defense policy planners type of defense policy planning cyber committee. So the policy questions, doctrine, strategy, these questions were not discussed anywhere in NATO. So we set that up with the policy when we passed in 2010 and 11. And we also touched the question of Article 5. We also understood that we are not going to draw the red line saying like, well, if you attack so and so many targets, this is Article 5, but if you attack so and so many targets, this is not Article 5. So because NATO never has set a threshold for Article 5, it's been always the question of strategic ambiguity, how the Article 5 is invoked. And so the cyber also follows the same mold. And we know that some of the later NATO policies and strategies, of course, have also addressing the same issue, like when exactly is the cyber attack becoming an Article 5 issue. And it is difficult to determine because also the threshold depends on the nation's own view. So I'm not saying that you can take the entire nation out with cyber attack in NATO nations, but certainly the attack surface sometimes is smaller in smaller nations and larger in larger nations. But also the consequences might be much more serious in larger nations. If there is no water and electricity for a week in larger nation, then you can imagine what happens.
Let me ask a follow-up question. I'm very interested in these questions of thresholds and hybrid threats. I've done some research work with the Czech government officials last year, and they expressed quite a lot of worry about these sub-threshold hybrid operations against European states. Do you feel that this is something that is taken seriously across all of NATO and Europe? The officials I interviewed were worried that Northern and Central Eastern European officials took these threats more seriously than some of their other counterparts.
Because they receive those hybrid operations on a daily basis. So they know what they talk about as well. And I think also larger nations like France always talk about disinformation because they have that, you know, this is what they also receive. And Germany certainly also is no stranger when it comes to hybrid operations. But of course, the awareness is not the same in all European Union member states, and certainly the Nordics and the Baltics and the Central European nations are having a higher level of awareness. The hybrid operations are a very interesting topic because, as it says, hybrid means that it's usually a combination of different domains which is used for the operation. And it has taken a long time from our Western policymakers to somehow be able to analyze the hybrid campaigns and hybrid operations, and also not to talk about response. Well, as we know, you know, cyber people sit in one corner, then the disinformation people sit in another corner of your government agencies. Then somewhere else you have, I don't know, the electronic warfare or some other competencies. So in a smaller nations, maybe it's easier to bring them all together quickly and so on. But the larger nations certainly have a problem how they deal with this, because already their structures are so big. So they probably have to put together some sort of task force in order to understand what happens if something goes on. Many, many small hybrid campaigns and hybrid operations can amount to a very serious damage to your national economy, for instance, or it can rig the elections. So it shouldn't be taken lightly. But because of many other threats as well in your national threat landscape, what tends to happen is that the policymakers, if there is a hot war going on, they are prioritizing the actual defense in terms of conventional defense. And then hybrid is something which is like a nuisance type of threat that they have to kind of accept, yes, but at the same time, when they have to prioritize, then it's difficult for them to prioritize. As one of the chiefs of defense of Estonia has said, you cannot cyber the river. So the conventional defense usually takes the precedent over the hybrid. And there is, of course, the question of resources and how these resources will be then distributed in each nation. And so it's not easy to be in charge of any hybrid task force or hybrid policy group right now.
Shifting focus to your work with the European Union, you led the 2013 and 2017 EU cybersecurity strategies. You also created a special department on cyber in the European External Action Service. You were also in charge of coordinating with other states, including the United States and others. Could you speak about the development of cyber policy in the EU? How did the negotiations differ between 2013 and 2017 as the perception of cyber was developing?
Took some years before the EU was properly up and running in terms of cyber, because it was a bit of a orphan topic. Everybody understood it's an important topic, but there was no logical group in the council structure to discuss this topic. So I might make a mistake, but I think it was in 2014 when the Friends of Presidency group was formulated in Brussels. I remember exactly how it happened, but the years are kind of fuzzy sometimes. And the Friends of Presidency group in the European Union Council of Ministers means that there is a topic where the European Union structure doesn't have a logical discussion forum. So, and in next year, it was then elevated to the Horizontal Working Party on Cyber Issues, which then is now the place where the cyber topics are discussed in Brussels, in the EU. The Horizontal Working Party is an interesting structure in the EU, because it discusses all cyber issues from internal market to internal security to foreign policy to defense. And all these internal market, foreign policy, defense structures are also existing separately. So it's a cross-cutting structure. And sometimes the same, for instance, if there is a new policy on cyber defense, it will be discussed in both the cyber group, but also the defense policy group. Or the same with cyber crime policy, it will be discussed in cyber group, but also in a proper addressing crime group. So I'm not confusing you with the EU vocabulary. So there are many of them abbreviations for those groups. So this is what happens when it comes to the member states' coordination on cyber issues in Brussels. So it's now almost just 10 years that there is a specific body now in the EU. And when I arrived to the EU, there was zero mechanism, zero body, nothing. So we created that with the help of a few active member states that also saw the need for this kind of work. And as I was working in the EAS, which is the European External Action Service, which is a security and foreign policy and defense policy body of the European Union, I had a lot of help from the British at that time, because then we had Catherine Ashton as the High Representative. And I think it was quite useful to make to have one of the large countries pushing it, this issue in Brussels. But there were also some smaller nations, of course, that were interested in pushing cyber forward. And yeah, step by step, we achieved all these steps. And I should, once I properly retire from government service, I should write a book about how we set it up in the European Union.
Oh, absolutely. I look forward to reading that. Could you elaborate a bit on the coordination process with other states? What was it like developing coordination with the US or others on such a sensitive topic as cybersecurity?
Yeah. EU is all public knowledge type of structure. EU doesn't have many secrets. The first European Union cyber strategy in 2012-2013 had several parts, and one of those parts was international cooperation. And the international mechanism and international forums were largely missing when 2007 happened in Estonia. But at the same time, already when we did Estonian strategy in 2007, we understood that you need to have some sort of international mechanism, because this is a global topic and you cannot just solve this alone. So we Estonian government has started to push for international cooperation in cyber issues as early as 2008, when our first strategy was ready. And so that we basically had articulated that the prime priority organizations for us would be OSCE, European Union, NATO, and United Nations. And I have now had a chance to work in three of those, or with UN. I worked when I was Estonian cyber ambassador, and I was inside of the EU and NATO. So basically, what we were doing in the EU at that time was to set up the policy of the European Union that helps the European Union to explain its cyber policy also to the outside world, have consultations, have dialogues with different large nations, and also to create a better understanding, because we also have set up dialogue with China, for instance, as early as 2012, when China was seen mostly as an opportunity for European nations, not so much as a rival right now. And and so we set up dialogues with the United States, with China, with India, with South Korea, with Japan, Brazil, and also with regional organizations. So there are those political dialogues European Union has with different other parts of the world, like there are two groups in Latin America, two organizations, Organization of American States and CELAC, which is the Central and Latin American States group. The same African Union, ASEAN, different other regional organizations. Of course, we had the EU dialogue with NATO, and the EU-US dialogue was seen also as a kind of, it happened, we set it up during the Snowden scandal. So it actually, we planned to set up it earlier, but then the Snowden revelations came in between, and it was then obvious that this is a topic where we need to discuss with each other.
Thank you so much. Could you give us more detail about the emergence of cyber in other international fora, such as the United Nations, but also the OSCE? I believe you presented on cyber to the UN Security Council.
Yeah, UN, of course, was also a organization had to be brought into this kind of broader cyber awareness. And without United Nations, I don't think that we can discuss anything which is a global issue, right? Of course, the question always in the UN is where do you discuss these kind of topics that do not obviously belong to any of the specific tranches that UN has. You know, UN has the Security Council structure and it has its committee structure. And you have the six committees in the UN. The first committee, which is international peace and security. The second committee, which is economic and social issues. The third committee, which is the human rights, privacy, and protection. Cybercrime, for instance, is under the third committee. And then all these other committees, culture and so on. And then there is the legal committee, which is the sixth committee. And so theoretically, you could put cyber under all of those committees, right? But under the first committee, which is international peace and security, certainly cyber deserves the place there because this is a security issue, not just an issue for technical discussions, but probably UN is not good at anyway, so UN needs to have political discussions. And so there was a process in cyber already earlier between the permanent five members, what we found out. But it hadn't led anywhere because of disagreements between the permanent five members, which is very usual between the permanent five members. They discuss all sorts of topics between each other, and quite often they do not agree. So cyber was one of those. They started to discuss that in 1998, as early as that. We will have a book coming out, what we call Cyber Diplomacy Textbook. And then there was one of the former U.S. officials who was there all the time when those processes took place is talking about this. And the UN first committee is now the like a prime cyber committee, not because it somehow needs to solve the cyber problem for our planet, but because peace and security is there. So we basically need to discuss how we are maintaining the international cyber stability between the governments and how we make sure that governments are following certain laws and rules in this field. So when when the Estonian attacks happened, this was spurring up the international community, and many nations looked at the UN and asked, why don't you have this kind of forum for the discussion under the first committee here? And it was decided then that yes, the US agreed as well with Russia. It used to be like the US-Russia bilateral issue all the time in the UN first committee. And then they both agreed that they will open this up to the broader international participation. And in 2009, the first group of governmental experts is then established in the United Nations system. And there were consecutive governmental experts groups, which were like small groups, 20 nations or 25 nations, like experts from the nations discussing the cyber issues and producing reports. So we had cyber somewhere anchored in the UN in the first committee, peace and security. But in the Security Council, it was not discussed because of the same sensitivity and the permanent five not seeing each other, this issue similarly. And usually, if there is a difficult topic, then the permanent five rather refrain discussing this in the UN. But what we did during our Estonian tenure was that we mainstreamed the topics that were discussed under the first committee in the Security Council, because Security Council is a precedent-based body. So once you bring certain topic to the Security Council, to the formal meeting of the Security Council, then the paperwork and documentation, which is then staying after this formal meeting becomes like a politically binding example for other UN members and Security Council members. So basically we now have some good binder of presentations and statements by many United Nations member states claiming that international law applies in cyberspace, that governments should follow the politically binding peacetime norms. We have a certain number of norms agreed, which are below the threshold, of course, because above the threshold we have the law of armed conflict applying. And then we have confidence building measures applying. And this is the agreement now in the whole UN system, from the committee work to the Security Council.
My final question. You still have an intimate view into international cyber policy. What is your assessment of the current situation and of the future of international cybersecurity policy development?
Yeah. I think right now this topic of cyber is already getting increasingly mixed up with new technologies and hybrid. Maybe 5 years ago, it used to be like a standalone topic because its relevance to international peace and security, it was placed in a certain part of a governmental agency structure or a ministry structure. And now we see that cyber is becoming like one of the many, which of course is understandable. But at the same time, the fact that we have AI now and we have many new emerging technologies, they all affect the cybersecurity picture. So we should not neglect cybersecurity because the AI-enabled cyber threats are out there already. We see a lot of AI-enabled disinformation. But disinformation, there is a difference between disinformation and cyber. So the proper cyber people are not putting those two things in one sentence. But what we see, you know, from the national security policy perspective is that you have to actually deal with many threats at the same time, be it cyber, be it disinformation, be it AI-enabled falsifications for your elections, or be it soon to be coming the decryption by quantum computers. So we are in a situation where we are a bit like Alice in Wonderland, where we have to really run very fast to be in the same place. And our cyber teams certainly should be very busy right now because they are receiving, not just in Estonia, but everywhere in Europe as well, increasing number of attacks. When you look at the threat actors that are now active in different European nations. Interestingly, it sometimes also correlates with the nation's support to Ukraine. When, for instance, Netherlands was announcing the F-16s, then the Netherlands received a lot of cyber attacks. When Italy was announcing some weapon delivery, then Italy was receiving cyber attacks. So it also correlates with the events in Ukraine sometimes, how the countries are cyber attacked. But all in all, I guess our European nations are quite strong. There is a lot of public-private partnership going on, and certainly we shouldn't be losing our vigilance, and we should work a lot in order to be even stronger. But probably what is a big gap right now is the lack of experts. Sometimes people are also dismissing this argument and saying that because of the AI-enabled defense, we might not need people anymore soon, which I don't believe, because even if we have AI-enabled defense, we need still experts. So that's why I think all the educational work is very important.
Well, Helle Tjermaklar, thank you so much for appearing on our podcast.
Thank you for inviting.
And that's all for today. Thank you so much for tuning in on whatever your favorite platform is to get podcasts. Please don't forget to subscribe and follow us at the Center for International Security at the Hertie School in Berlin. Remember, if you're interested in a master's degree in international security, we offer an incredible Master's of International Affairs with an international security focus here at the Hertie School. The next several episodes will continue to focus on cyber policy and diplomacy, so please keep an eye out on our next release. Until then, this is David Bukowski coming to you from Berlin.